Linda Carroll, New York. Thank you. It's always wonderful to hear you speak, and I think that so much of the work that you've done over the past decades has been wonderful and continues to keep reminding us that there's so much more that we can get from even small data like this spot, the spot and the spot. But I think that getting back to the constants, I think that one of the things that I think beginning singers sometimes are fraught with is overworking everything. And I think that can also include the amount of subglottal pressure that they use. Certainly, we see this in flow. They either underuse it or overuse it, and it seems to be with pressures that, at least from my experience from, I won't say how many decades now, but that they either overuse consonants to not serve themselves well or underuse the pressures that they need to be using in the articulators so that they lose the clarity of the consonants. Now, I wonder if you might make a comment about that perhaps a strategy for more elite singers would be to try to equalize some of the pressures that would be creating more turbulence within the system and try to think a little bit of the characteristic of using a little bit of pseudo-voicing of unvoiced plosives when they have a it's like when they have a voiced, unvoiced plosive situation of trying to maintain just a little bit of trying to think about of a little bit of voicing for unvoiced to be able to control the significant turbulence that can happen in the vocal tract as a result of that excessive subglottal pressure. Because we rarely, I've looked at a lot of singers at very high levels, and although some of them have gotten up high, none of them came anywhere close to 50 centimeters. Now, that might be an artifact of esophageal pressure versus subglottal pressure, but in the septus I looked at, it never got higher than the very highest was 37, and I had a lot of questions on that.